Casey joins the hollow sound of silent people walking down the stairway to the subway in the shadows down below. Following the footsteps through the neon darkened corridors of silent desperation, never speaking to a soul. The poisoned air he's breathing has the dirty smell of dying, 'cause it's never seen the sunshine and it's never felt the rain. But Casey minds the arrows and ignores the fatal echoes of the clicking of the turnstile and the rattle of his chains. Oh, she said, Casey, it's been so long since I've seen you. Here, she said, just a kiss to make.
If you think it's a hassle, I just fit in. You know it's a struggle.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Walmart is in the midst of a new public relations campaign aimed at countering criticisms leveled against it by organized labor and others that Walmart's practices are harmful to workers and to the communities in which it operates. Greg Denier of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says there are real social costs created by Walmart. Denier told the Boston Globe that full-time workers at Walmart are not only low-paid, but often don't get full 40-hour weeks nor adequate health insurance. Walmart says it provides stable jobs, a 401k retirement plan, and opportunities for advancement. Walmart is the biggest employer in the U.S. with 1.2 million workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union is trying to organize some Walmart stores.
70,000 daily bus riders in Queens and Brooklyn have been stranded by a bus worker strike. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Union representatives say talks have been focused on health care, but they broke down on Friday. Union leaders are angry that the mayor will not discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract. John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
New York City Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations have been scheduled, and bus riders have been forced to find other forms of transportation.
A little-known Department of Labor program that provides wage insurance for older workers is in place until 2007. The test program was written into the 2002 trade bill. The program is for workers over 50 displaced from their jobs due to trade competition and earning less in the new jobs than they did in the old ones. To be eligible for the program, workers have to be making less than $50,000 a year. The wage subsidy is 50% of the difference between their old salaries and their new ones. It's called the Alternative Trade Adjustment Assistance for Older Workers. Older workers displaced by foreign trade are also eligible for a credit toward health care costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Department of Labor plans to no longer require employers to report data on female and male employees after July 2005. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cites a lack of interest as the primary reason for dropping those statistics. A letter endorsed by both Republican and Democratic Congresswomen is currently circulating Congress asking that the Bureau reconsider. There is concern that without the information, a distorted picture of employment changes may result.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Gosh, there's never a flamethrower handy when you need one. It's bad enough that food scientists have used genetic manipulation to create dangerous Frankenfoods, but now they've definitely gone too far. They're messing with Mexican food. I bring you two alarming examples from the laboratories at Texas A&M University. First, a scientist there has devoted himself and untold wads of our tax dollars to produce this stunning technological advance, a low-heat habanero pepper. Yoo-hoo, Professor! The whole idea of the habanero is that it is hot. Way too hot for my taste. But others are gluttons for heat, so the habanero is their gold standard of what a pepper should be. But, cries the professor, with our new meek habanero, all the people who shy away from the heat can now eat one. Yoo-hoo again. There are hundreds of varieties of peppers, all with varying degrees of hot. You want meek? Eat a pimento. But this pepper guy looks sane next to his madcap colleague at A&M, who has been doing busy work with another Mexican food staple, the humble tortilla. Tortillas are the essence of simplicity, and it's best to eat them fresh, though they'll naturally stay fresh for a few days. But this is not good enough for the food science crowd or for the big corporate distributors that are hoping to lock up the national market. So for the past 3 years, this lab smock has had his mind, and more of our tax money, at work on the development of a flour tortilla that he claims will stay fresh without refrigeration for more than a month. And he's not stopping there. He's now collaborating with Iowa State Food Mechanics to produce fresh tortillas that will last, get this, 4 years. This is Jim Hightower saying, do we need any of this? How many people are sitting at their kitchen table in the morning thinking, what America really needs is a non-hot habanero and a tortilla that'll last 4 years?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program, my friends. Happy Monday. The weekend is over. Today, the day that we commemorate the birth of the Reverend Martin Luther King, who supplied our quote for the day, or who we quote as our quote for the day. He said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." A great motto. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. Welcome to the show. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The website, tomhartman.com. On the air, on radio stations across the nation. Sirius Satellite Radio, radiopower.org. Cable Radio Network with archives of White Rose Society and tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our chat room on this national holiday, Martin Luther King Day, you're welcome to. Go to tomhartman.com and click the live chat link. It'll take you there. The Reverend Martin Luther King, born on the 15th of January, 1929, which is not today, but today is the official holiday. This was declared a national holiday in 1983. There were only two Americans, and I think this is quite a significant fact, reality, two Americans for whom we have national holidays, the first being George Washington, the second being Martin Luther King. And his work, his life's work, was so extraordinary, and in many ways it actually went beyond just not to minimize the struggle for civil rights. I mean, this is a dramatic and powerful struggle, which is ongoing today. And in fact, we're going to, as we get into the program, get into how the cons are trying to roll back even Martin Luther King's work. But he also was a great advocate for peace. He came out against the Vietnam War. He was absolutely congruent and coherent, consistent, really, consistent is the word, in his worldview and in his application of the principle of nonviolence and integrity to the ideals of this nation. Just extraordinary. Born on January 15, 1929. He was ordained in 1947. Graduated from Morehouse in 1948. He married his wife, Coretta Scott King, in 1953. He headed up the Montgomery bus boycotts of 1955 and 56. His I Have a Dream speech, perhaps his most famous, the year before he received the Nobel Peace Prize, which was 1964, was given in 1963, August 28th of 1963. In Washington, D.C., and this one of the extraordinary bits of rhetoric for which he is well remembered. Here's just a small clip from that.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
All men and women.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
And having lived in Georgia for, I think, 16 years, and if they add it up, I can tell you now, I think to some extent, his dream has been realized. I can also tell you that having worked back when I was writing books on attention deficit disorder and working in the education field, and I still do in a very minimal way. I'm president of the board of directors of the Hunter School over in New Hampshire, but which is a voluntary position. So I'm not, I suppose, working in that field any longer, but I worked for a while as a consultant to the Atlanta schools. The inner city Atlanta schools. And I can tell you that in many ways, Dr. King's dream has not been realized as well. That we still have in the United States the cancer of racism. It is not gone. It is writ large, in fact, across our nation in ways that many folks just very much don't want to acknowledge. And that the conservatives now just want to take us absolutely backwards in this. Today, for example, this is the ultimate insult. The GOP gubernatorial candidate for New Jersey, of course, New Jersey, you know, the governor has stepped down, has come out as being a gay American and stepped down. And so this guy, Steve Lonergan, who is running for governor of New Jersey as a Republican, is holding a news conference in 1 hour, you know, 45 minutes from now in New Jersey, at which time he will suggest that if he is elected governor of New Jersey, he will shut down all state affirmative action offices and prohibit state agencies from asking someone's race on a job or grant application, college admission form, or other government document. See, this is the process of taking the other guy, taking the language of non-discrimination, taking the language of the goal and twisting it around to say, we have already reached the goal, and therefore we don't need the work, we don't need the to take the steps that would bring us to the goal. This is what they're saying, right? We obviously have not reached the goal. But nonetheless, he says, this is Lonergan, he says, Dr. King's dream that people be judged not on the color of their skin but on the content of their character can only be achieved by ending the practice of classifying people by skin color or other demographic statistic and make ability the only qualification in whether someone can do a job. End quote. This is the guy. This guy is, you know, a professional grandstander. First of all, he's the guy who was, quote, illegally, end quote, singing Christmas carols in front of a school at Christmas. And of course, there was no law against it. Fox News loved it. But other than that, it was largely ignored. It'll be interesting to see if this gets largely ignored. I think it probably should be. But on the other hand, it's important to point it out what it's going on. That the reality is that if you have a group of people who for 400 years or longer in the case of Native Americans, certainly in the case of African Americans, 400 years were oppressed, were held as slaves in the United States for several hundred years, let's say. From what this country was first settled in 1600, the slave trade began in the mid 1600s. Although, you know, you could say we were discovered in the 1400s, there were folks showing up here in the 1500s, but nonetheless, from 1600s to late 1800s, 200 years, and then another 100 years of legal apartheid that just ended really in my lifetime. Apartheid in the United States ended. And to say, okay, we're just going to pretend none of that happened and just wipe the slate clean. Yep, everything's fine. Come on. Why would the cons be pushing this? Because the conservative worldview is one of classes and structures, and very much believes in an underclass, that an underclass, they believe, is a necessary thing in America, that there must be an overclass and an underclass. And it's interesting, Martin Luther King pointed out in his life that the majority of poor people in the United States are actually white, not black, and that he was speaking for them as well. He took the issue of race and also made it clear that it was an issue of class in America. And the conservatives would like us to forget that. They would like us to pretend it's not there. Don't look at those CEOs behind the curtain. We're going to get into the economics of this, by the way, in our second and third hour. Will our seniors be working on the chain gang? But first, let me just a couple of quotes here from Martin Luther King. This is from an article John Nichols wrote in The Nation, in which he compiled some of King's this man was absolutely brilliant, just absolutely brilliant. He said, true compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. Now, you know, the George Bush likes to talk about Christian compassion, and Martin Luther King, in my opinion, not only embodied liberal values, embodied Christian values, and of course the values of every other major religion as well. You could say Judeo-Christian values, but it's Hindu and Buddhist and Islamic right across the board. But again, the cons are trying to say that they're the only. I don't need to go there. You understand. Anyhow, he says true compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It is not haphazard and superficial. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. A true revolution of values, said Martin Luther King, will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. Where are the people in the Democratic Party speaking like this today? With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say, this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say, this is not just. As Martin Luther King said in Manhattan's Riverside Church on April 4, 1967, the Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. He also spoke about war. A true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into veins of people normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields physically handicapped and psychologically deranged cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death, said Martin Luther King. Brilliant. True. April 4th, 1967. He was finally assassinated in 1968. The world lost a great man. 20 minutes after the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the Truth Arena.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you're too arrogant. If you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power, and I'll place it in the hands of a nation that doesn't even know my name. I call on Washington today. I call on every man and woman of goodwill all over America today. I call on the young men of America who must make a choice today. Take a stand on this issue. Tomorrow may be too late. The book may close. And I don't know about you, I ain't gonna study war no more.
I ain't gonna study war no more. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. That, of course, Martin Luther King, whose birthday is commemorated today. He was born in 1929 on the 15th of January. But the federal holiday is the third Monday of the month. And here we are. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see here. Harold from Greenland, New Hampshire on the line. Hey, Harold, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, good morning. I'm not from Greenland. I'm calling from Greenland, but I'm from Vermont.
Oh, okay.
My question is, or my complaint is the secrecy in this Bush regime.
Mm-hmm.
Cons who serve the rich. We don't know. We have no idea of what is going on. The liberals are angry with some of the things that Bush is doing. But if we only knew half of what is going on.
Well, certainly when it comes to the people who are being arrested illegally and unconstitutionally, we don't know. Certainly when it comes to the backroom deals that are being cut with polluters and the energy bill, for example, we don't know. Certainly when it comes to, you know, how did the Medicare bill come about, which created, you want to talk about a crisis. Medicare is facing a huge crisis because of this giveaway to the insurance companies and the drug companies. We don't know. Yeah, absolutely. This is the most secretive administration in history.
Exactly.
They're moving in a totally Stalinist direction.
Those are some of the things we know. That we don't know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other things that we don't know.
Yeah.
That this regime moves and they.
So Harold, I got it. You know, and I agree with you. But here, Harold, what are you going to do about it?
They don't. Well, we don't. That's why I'm calling. That's what I'm so upset about is we there's nothing we can do about it because we don't.
No, absolutely. Actually, there is a lot that you can do about it, Harold. There is a lot that you can do about it. What you can do about it is start getting elected officials, even at the local level, getting elected officials who are going to stand up for transparency in government, who are going to stand up for the ideals of this country, to say that our government is a government of, by, and for we the people, not of, by, and for corporate America, of, by, and for we the people.
Yes, but this president doesn't follow.
I understand that, and you're not going to be able, and I'm not probably going to be able to change that this week, this month, maybe not even in this administration. But if we want to see America go back to the America that we once were in terms of at least respecting some modicum of belief that government should be transparent and that we should, and that the government should be under the control of we the people rather than the control of corporations, then that's going to require that you and I get politically active, that you show up for example, Democracy for America meetups, that you participate, that you join TrueMajority.org or MoveOn.org, that you participate with these groups, that you join with your neighbors. There are here in Montpelier, Vermont, there's a half a dozen different groups of local citizens who get together regularly once a month. In fact, tomorrow night I'm going to one of these little meetings of citizens, people getting together and talking about what's going on. And the upshot of that is bringing about a transformation in America. We have to transform the political face of this country. And, you know, the Republicans figured out how to do that in the 60s, in the 70s, and here we are. We've got to do it, too. 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live, and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Walmart is in the midst of a new public relations campaign aimed at countering criticisms leveled against it by organized labor and others that Walmart's practices are harmful to workers and to the communities in which it operates. Greg Denier of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says there are real social costs created by Walmart. Denier told the Boston Globe that full-time workers at Walmart are not only low-paid, but often don't get full 40-hour weeks nor adequate health insurance. Walmart says it provides stable jobs, a 401k retirement plan, and opportunities for advancement. Walmart is the biggest employer in the U.S. with 1.2 million workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union is trying to organize some Walmart stores.
70,000 daily bus riders in Queens and Brooklyn have been stranded by a bus worker strike. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Union representatives say talks have been focused on health care, but they broke down on Friday. Union leaders are angry that the mayor will not discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract. John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
New York City Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations have been scheduled, and bus riders have been forced to find other forms of transportation.
A little-known Department of Labor program that provides wage insurance for older workers is in place until 2007. The test program was written into the 2002 trade bill. The program is for workers over 50 displaced from their jobs due to trade competition and earning less in the new jobs than they did in the old ones. To be eligible for the program, workers have to be making less than $50,000 a year. The wage subsidy is 50% of the difference between their old salaries and their new ones. It's called the Alternative Trade Adjustment Assistance for Older Workers. Older workers displaced by foreign trade are also eligible for a credit toward health care costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Department of Labor plans to no longer require employers to report data on female and male employees after July 2005. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cites a lack of interest as the primary reason for dropping those statistics. A letter endorsed by both Republican and Democratic Congresswomen is currently circulating Congress asking that the Bureau reconsider. There is concern that without the information, a distorted picture of employment changes may result.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Hey, it's time for an I'm rich. I don't care about the little guy. Alert.
Oh, boy, I'm rich. I'm wealthy. I'm independent. I'm socially secure. I'm rich. I'm rich.
Yes, indeed. That's the official mantra of the Bush administration and all of the millionaires in the cabinet. And during a town hall meeting on January 11th in Washington, D.C., before an audience of many African Americans, George W. Bush, this writes Jackson Thoreau, made some condescending and stereotypical, if not outright racist, remarks. The comments came a few days before Martin Luther King Day, no less. In outlining his plan to rob the Social Security Trust Fund, reward wealthy Wall Street campaign contributors with billions in new fees and investment funds, Bush said, quote, "A personal savings account will compound over time and grow over time. A personal savings account can't be used to bet on the lottery or a dice game or the track." So Bush thinks all African Americans waste their money on dice games and the betting tracks, eh? Writes Jackson Thoreau. At another point, Bush made reference to how blacks should like the change to Social Security, since African American males die sooner than other groups, and they can pass their accounts to their kids. Isn't this outrageous? Instead of saying, you know, we need better education, we need better job training, we need better health care, we've got to solve the social. I mean, African American males are not dying younger than whites in this country because of some race gene. There's actually no gene for race. Race is an artificial distinction. There are genes for skin color, there are genes for hair color, things like that, eye color, but they're all individual different genes. There's no one gene that makes somebody a particular race. They've discovered just in the last 10 years. African-American males are not dying younger because they're black. They're dying younger because our society has not healed from the wounds of 200 plus years of slavery and 100 years of legal apartheid. And the cons would have you completely ignore that fact. And George W. Bush says, and isn't it a wonderful thing that you'll be able to pass along your Social Security to your children? Well, the reality, George W., is that when parents die, leaving behind indigent children, Social Security actually does kick in for those children already. But apparently George W. doesn't know that. Let's go to the phones, 1-866-889-8894. Bill in Michigan on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today, man?
I am great, but I'll get better, Bill. What about you?
Hey, you knocking it out the park today on your comments about Martin Luther King and then on your comment just then about George W. Bush. You knocking it out the park.
Thank you. Okay. These guys are clueless. I mean, they're just either they're clueless or they are sick and deluded. I mean, it's one or the other. I'm assuming that they're clueless, that they've just like never had contact with the rest of America. You know.
Hey, Tom, I don't think they're clueless, but check this out. I got a question for you.
Sure.
And then I got a comment.
Sure.
Okay. My question is, will history fall on the side of Martin Luther King? Okay, that's my question. Do history fall on the side of Martin Luther King? And my comment is, when John Kerry said about the global test, right?
Yeah.
Okay, John Kerry never really was able to explain himself pretty good.
Yeah.
But John Edwards, in this debate against Dick Cheney brought up the global test. And John Edwards said, it's the truth, it's the truth, it's the truth. And not one time did Dick Cheney say anything about the truth, because the Republicans don't fall upon the side of truth. They fall upon the side of ideology. What is it?
Ideology, yeah.
Ideology,
yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
I'll take your comments off the air, sir.
Yeah, okay. Bill, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, and thank you for your kind comments. Whether history will fall on the side of Martin Luther King or not is a huge question, and my answer is absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. If you look, first of all, look at the inspirations for Dr. King. Gandhi in India, Jesus, the history, the reality is that democracy has been increasing. I mean, when this country was founded in 1776, and yes, it was a flawed experiment, and we had slavery and women couldn't vote, all those things, but it still was a radical departure from kings and kingdoms. And we were the first democracy since, in 3,000 years since Greece, And now there's, what, over 140 of them in the world, I believe? 147? I'm not sure the exact number. And, you know, many of them are flawed. Many of them are not complete democracies. But it's moving in that direction. And the other thing that convinces me that Dr. King's vision of an egalitarian, equalitarian society, a society that views all people, literally views all people as equal or having equal opportunity. Obviously, everybody's not equal. Some people are taller than others. Some people are heavier than others. Some people are smarter than others. Some people are, you know, whatever. But there are differences among people, but everybody has equal opportunity. The thing that gives me absolute certainty, Bill, that we're going to see Dr. King's vision realized, and maybe not in my lifetime, I hope so, is that when you look at tribal people, when you look at the history of the people who were here before folks from Europe first started invading North America, the vast majority of the tribal people were living in peace. The Iroquois Confederacy is what most of our Constitution was modeled after. They had 10,000 years of trial and error experimentation, and what they had worked out was a society that in very many ways reflected these values. And I there's an entire chapter about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? And no shortage of websites on it, and the influence of the Iroquois Confederacy, and Peter Farb's book, The Rise of Civilization, The Rise of American Civilization, and the history of the native, of what he called the Native Indians. And his book was published in 1964. Farb has been dead for a while. The book is out of print, but you can find used copies. It's brilliant. Dan Quinn used examples from that book in his Ishmael books. So I think history is on the side of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I'm very optimistic about that, frankly. Gary, a truck driver on the road in Missouri, is on the line. Hey, Gary, what's up?
They put another one on.
They put another one on? Hey, Gary?
Yeah? Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Eric in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I got my lines wrong. Eric, what's up?
I have a question. Do you believe all people are created equal?
I believe that all people should have equal opportunity from birth. As I said, no, I don't. It would be, you know, if you want to play word games with me, it would be silly to say that everybody is identical.
Well, everyone should be equal, yes. Then I have a question about affirmative action. Isn't that giving the black person more rights than a white person?
Gary, if I come over to your house and I beat you down with a pipe and I break both your legs and break your arms and then say, okay, Gary, next week I'm going to meet in the front yard with you and we're going to have another fist fight because we're both guys. Is that going to be an equal fight?
Could be.
Do you think
no.
so?
No.
Come
Probably
on.
Not.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that for 300 years, that's what we did to African Americans in this country. And to say now, okay, no problem, we're just going to pretend none of that happened. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't believe that, and you're a meathead.
Isn't it wonderful? Gary is gone. I did not cut him off. Gary cut himself off. I'm sorry, Eric. That was Eric in Pittsburgh. I got to clean this up because I got the wrong button here pushed, and now Rama's got line one lit up. I'm not sure where Gary went. But Mark from Grand Rapids is on line two here. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I don't think you're a meathead.
Well,
we all are once in a while, but anyway.
Yeah, but not today anyway.
Not today. Absolutely not. I had to do some research on Martin Luther King for an interfaith group that I talk at once in a while here in Grand Rapids. I found out something very interesting. In 1967, he started a group called the Poor People's Campaign. And that campaign believed that the federal government should guarantee an annual income for poor people, and that there should be a redistribution of wealth in America. And he said that poverty was as evil as racism.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think I quoted, I shared some a small part of a quote to that effect in the beginning. And I made the point that Martin Luther King, in one of his speeches, I forget which one it was, made the point that there are more poor whites in America than poor blacks, or there were at the time he was speaking. There still are. And that this was, in many regards, what he was working for was social justice, not just racial justice. And that social justice was as much a class issue as a race issue. Yeah,
it's interesting that he died shortly after that. I mean, you know, conspiracies galore, of course. I don't know, but I mean, he was
taking on the establishment at all levels. I mean, he was opposed to the Vietnam War. He was opposed to the corporatization of America. He was opposed to the theft of resources by the dynastic families like the Bush family. He was in favor of, as you say, redistribution of wealth, if you want to call it that. I mean, you could argue that that's what the home mortgage deductions are. That's what child tax credits are. I mean, we have literally thousands of forms of redistribution of wealth in the United States. And unfortunately, what's happening is increasingly now, given that about $47 billion of the federal budget every year goes to human welfare and about $155 billion a year goes to corporate welfare, we're seeing an increasing redistribution of wealth toward the corporate and the rich. Anyhow, I got to move along. Thanks for the call, Rick. Good to hear from you. Yep. Or Mark, I'm sorry, Mark. Boy, today, keeping names straight. Let's try and get it right this time. James in Tennessee. Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Good. I just want to make a comment. I think that one guy was talking about affirmative action, and I'm an African-American, and I can't say I agree or disagree with affirmative action, but what I think is important is the protection of persons' individual rights and property. If we worried about our individual rights and property, that covers everything. That covers civil rights, that covers women's rights, that covers, because individual rights is everybody, so we could do away with everything else if we just focus on individual rights and property, and then we can do away with the affirmative actions and women's rights and civil rights, because I think that's what King was all about. He was about individual protection of individual rights and properties for everybody, regardless of color, creed, but no matter what, you know. Then after that, all these organizations pop up of protection of women's rights and civil rights and all kind of rights, you name it, is out there. It all comes down to and boils down to one thing: the protection of individual rights and properties.
James, I gotta say, I think you've got two thirds of it. The one third that you're missing, and you've got the libertarian two thirds. The one third that you're missing is the same part that the libertarians miss, and that is the social contract. The fact that it is individual rights, property rights, and the needs and health. Overall health of society, of the rest of us.
You're right. You're exactly right.
We have to have that third. You got to have that third piece in there. Otherwise, you don't have it. And that third piece is where Martin Luther King was focusing his attention. And that third piece is the part that the conservatives don't like to talk about, because they just want to talk about their individual rights and property rights. And therefore, they have the power. Therefore, they say government should not restrain them from the big fish eating the little fish until there's nothing left but big fish and little teeny tiny fish hiding, you know, and taking us back to the world of Charles Dickens. So, you know, you got to be careful with that kind of rhetoric, but because there is that third piece.
And you're right about the social thing. You're absolutely right. But I think it just all comes down to individual. I mean, if we protect our individual and property rights, I mean, so many problems could be solved. But.
So many would be. And we need to attend to our social rights. Good point, James. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Patrick, a truck driver on the road. Hey, Patrick.
Hello, sir.
What's up?
My main point, the last caller just hit on one of my main points. I was trying to. I'd agreed with the two callers past about affirmative action. I think Martin Luther King's visions and civil rights had kind of gotten distorted with the affirmative action, in the sense that it has now reversed the racism, in my mind, in the workforce area.
I got to say, Patrick, in what we need to do, in my opinion, is we need to be continuously calibrating this stuff, because the fact of the matter is that those people that we beat up with that lead pipe and broke their legs and arms are not yet fully healed.
Well, no,
and, you know, to use that metaphor.
Have you ever oppressed or degraded a minority? I know I haven't.
I am part of this nation, and so are you. And
yeah,
so we have.
But I don't think there comes a point in time where you have to look back and say, you know, we're at a better place today.
There comes a point in time, Patrick, when you've got to look back and say, I'm going to take responsibility for what my nation has done.
Yes, but there's also a point in time where you say, you know, you have to say, well, we're at a better place today. And you get a lot of these radical groups. And, you know, I try to understand all aspects. I don't just wave somebody off. But most of these radical groups, the way they initiate people into their ranks is they take things like affirmative action or bad things that are hurting them. and manipulate these people's minds. Now, with affirmative action, I mean, I'm a full believer that if somebody is denied their right to work just because they're either, you know, a minority, a female, yellow with green polka dots,
that's not the point of affirmative. That's not the point of affirmative action, Patrick. That's the point of anti-discrimination laws. Affirmative action is where you've got somebody who for 15, 20 generations has been denied the right to have a job, because they were held as slaves. And the consequence of that is that they're still in the bondage of not having, you know, not ever having had the culture of education in their individual family. And so we're going to give them those bootstraps to lift themselves up with. It was affirmative action that gave Condi Rice and Colin Powell, for example, the opportunities to get the educations that they got that allowed them to make the most of themselves, which they did. You know,
yeah,
God bless them.
It's so overly.
Well, this is where it needs to be. This is where it needs to be continuously calibrated. I mean, because we all, I believe, are looking toward that day when there will be no more need for affirmative action.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. I'm just saying that today it's way out of balance. It's so far out of balance now that we're now reversing a process, and we have generations of people that may be, you know, Irish or Russian or whatever, but because the color of their skin is white, they can't get certain college loans. They can't get into certain colleges.
Yeah. Well, we may be in some areas pushing the edge of it. You know, I'll give you that. But as I said, I think we need to be constantly recalibrating these things, working toward the day when it's no longer necessary. But today is not the day that it's no longer necessary. As this guy who's running for governor in New Jersey, this Republican, is saying, we still have a serious problem here in the United States, the consequence of 300 years of institutional racism.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio.
In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Baxan Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Louis Armstrong, another extraordinary man who knew well what apartheid in America meant. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 4 minutes before the hour. Chris from Atlanta, Georgia on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I always try and look at every, you know, every issue from both sides. And me being an African-American, it's like I can say I experienced racism, you know, growing up in this country. But then, I try and look at things from both sides. And I think affirmative action, a lot... a lot of people have a problem with it, but I think there's a disconnect in this country to where people don't know their history. You know, the history needs to be taught in school.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one thing I would like to know is, I know a lot of blacks would, you know, like with Jesse Jackson, a lot of leaders would, people would make the point to where they're making the people feel as victims. But I think they need to address it to a point where they need to find what the effects of racism are on the people to this point, you know?
Yeah, it's we need to be addressing that. And then there's the other issue, Chris, of how the conservatives don't want us talking about the real issues of corporate control and the Walmartization of America. And so they try and get folks like Patrick, a truck driver who called just before the break, to think that it's affirmative action that's destroying the quote white middle class end quote to pit basically one race against another. You know, they're so good at dividing in order to prevent us from talking about the fact that no, it's not affirmative action that is causing folks to lose their job, white folks in America to lose their job. It's not affirmative action. It is Bush's economic policies. It's conservative economic policies.
Right, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, you got to picture it to say. Say a couple of generations ago, say the roles are reversed, and I, you know, you were taken out of your family and had to go work for free. No one would even work for free nowadays. So I think people need to actually look into that. And you're actually working for free.
someone else is profiting off of that, and you're being held back. So
yeah.
I think people really need to look into that and see the effects of it to today.
I agree with you, Chris. And essentially, I think what you're saying is what I said, which is that we have to be continually recalibrating affirmative action programs so that they really are reversing the damage and they don't end up, you know, flipping around. And yet, there still is so much damage that is still so evident in our society as a consequence of having worked in inner city schools. I can tell you, it's there and it's real and it needs to be addressed. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Truth and Common Sense.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Walmart is in the midst of a new public relations campaign aimed at countering criticisms leveled against it by organized labor and others that Walmart's practices are harmful to workers and to the communities in which it operates. Greg Denier of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says there are real social costs created by Walmart. Denier told the Boston Globe that full-time workers at Walmart are not only low paid, but often don't get full 40-hour weeks nor adequate health insurance. Walmart says it provides stable jobs, a 401k retirement plan, and opportunities for advancement. Walmart is the biggest employer in the U.S. with 1.2 million workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union is trying to organize some Walmart stores.
70,000 daily bus riders in Queens and Brooklyn have been stranded by a bus worker strike. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Union representatives say talks have been focused on health care, but they broke down on Friday. Union leaders are angry that the mayor will not discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract. John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
New York City Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations have been scheduled, and bus riders have been forced to find other forms of transportation.
A little-known Department of Labor program that provides wage insurance for older workers is in place until 2007. The test program was written into the 2002 trade bill. The program is for workers over 50 displaced from their jobs due to trade competition and earning less in the new jobs than they did in the old ones. To be eligible for the program, workers have to be making less than $50,000 a year. The wage subsidy is 50% of the difference between their old salaries and their new ones. It's called the Alternative Trade Adjustment Assistance for Older Workers. Older workers displaced by foreign trade are also eligible for credit toward health care costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Department of Labor plans to no longer require employers to report data on female and male employees after July 2005. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cites a lack of interest as the primary reason for dropping those statistics. A letter endorsed by both Republican and Democratic Congresswomen is currently circulating Congress asking that the Bureau reconsider. There is concern that without the information, a distorted picture of employment changes may result.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Tom DeLay is not merely covered in political slime. He seems to ooze it from within. Even when he makes a public show of trying to wash his hands of some of the unethical sleaze attached to him, the Republican majority leader ends up with more sleaze on him than ever, and he spreads it all over Congress. DeLay is so nasty that even the meek and weak House Ethics Committee had no choice but to publicly admonish him 3 times last year for various unethical lapses. Also, he's in danger of being indicted by a grand jury in Texas for what amounts to the illegal laundering of corporate money for state legislative elections. His Texas legal problem is sticky for Tom, since his own party's rules call for any indicted leaders to resign from their leadership post. No problem, figured Tom the sleaze. I'll just get the GOP caucus to eliminate this bothersome rule. Last November, they did just that. However, there was such an outpouring of public disgust at this I'm-above-the-law ploy that even DeLay had to back off. In early January, he got the caucus to reverse itself, claiming that he didn't want to provide an issue for his political opponents. He was hailed by his colleagues as a magnanimous, selfless leader, with one Republican gushing, "I feel like we've just taken a shower." No, you've just been taken. In the same meeting, DeLay got the GOP majority to fix the House Ethics Committee so it will be unable to pursue future cases against him. Under previous rules, if the 2 Republicans on the committee and the 2 Democrats could not agree about pursuing a complaint, the case went to a special subcommittee for further investigation. Under Tom's new rule, however, a split vote means the ethics complaint is automatically dropped. So simply by asserting party loyalty, DeLay can avoid any more annoying inquiries into his ethics. This is Jim Hightower saying, not only is Tom ethically impaired, but now so is the entire House.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And speaking of values, the Associated Press, an AP story, local members of Congress say they have received few to no calls from constituents upset about the expense of the inaugural. The fact that Washington, D.C. is having to pay for it instead of providing biohazard gear to their firefighters. They are going to be building bleachers for which George W. Bush will charge admission on which to sit. Well, if you would like to let your voice be known to your member of Congress or the United States Senate, one phone number reaches all. It's area code 202. That's the Washington, D.C. area code, 202-224-3121. And that will get you to the Capitol switchboard, and you can ask for your member of Congress. If you don't know, you can say, hi, I'm calling from Wyoming, and I'm not sure who my congressman is. Can you tell me? And they will even tell you and connect you. 1-202-224-3121 is that telephone number. And if you are concerned about the outrageous amount of money being spent on this coronation, lots of interesting news. Howard Dean seems to be pulling ahead in the lead. And today, of course, is Martin Luther King Day. So lots of stuff. Let's pick up a few more phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. By the way, welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. That's our phone number. The website is tomhartman.com if you'd like to participate in our live chat. We actually have a live chat room that runs while we're on the air. You can hang out there, and we will put you there as well. Bob, a truck driver on the road, is online. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'm a liberal who doesn't agree with affirmative action.
Okay.
Hey,
Bob, is there any chance?
What I've done.
Bob, any chance you could pick that phone up and talk right into it? Because it's hard to hear you. Whoa. You there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, now we can hear you. You were saying?
I said I'm not responsible for what other people have done in the past. I'm only responsible for what I have done.
So then you think that it would be quite all right if, for example, George W. Bush were to say, okay, Bob, you no longer have any constitutional rights at all because you're not claiming that there is any connection between you and what the Founding Fathers did.
There's none.
There's none. You have no history. You have no history. You have no past.
I don't go back that far, no.
Okay, so therefore, if George W. Bush said, you know, we're just going to declare the Constitution null and void because the people who wrote it are dead. That would be okay with you?
No, it wouldn't.
But I thought that you had nothing to do with that.
Well, I didn't, but you can't do that kind of stuff.
Why not? Those people are dead, and you had nothing to do with them. You and I had nothing to do with writing a Constitution. Why should we be protected by it? You and I had nothing to do with keeping slaves. Why should we be part of a society that's trying to repair the damage of slavery? It's the answer to both questions is the same answer, Bob, and that is that we are both members of society. We're both members of America. We are participants in the society. We are not just lone individuals.
The slaves should have been paid back when the Civil War ended by taking the assets of the slaveholders.
Well, you know, I'm not going to disagree with you on that, but that didn't happen, and so here we are. And we are all members of society, and we want to take the good, and we have to deal with the bad. We can't just sit around and say, you know, we're going to ignore the bad. We're going to ignore all that awful stuff that happened back then and slavery. We're just going to ignore that. But we would like to take the advantage of the good stuff, the hundreds of years of progress, the infrastructure that we've built up, the public road system, the railroad system, the interstate highway system. Even though we didn't build that, even our relatives maybe didn't build it, we would like to hang on to that. We'd like to hang on to that Constitution. We'd like to hang on to those constitutional protections. You can't pick and choose, Bob. The conservatives who are trying to split one race from another, who are trying to use race as a tool to divide people so that they can then politically conquer them, would like you to think that that's, you know, a reasonable. But you examine it logically and it falls apart. Do you get it?
Well, not exactly, no.
Okay, here, let me just put it a different way. You and I are both citizens of the United States. As citizens of the United States, I'm assuming you're a citizen of the United States. As citizens of the United States, we have there's a whole long history behind us that brought us to this moment, that makes it possible for you to have a job, for me to have a job, for us for our kids to have public education, for, you know, all these things, right? That there's this whole long history that a lot of good stuff that makes it possible for us to live in this American country, that makes it different than some, you know, poverty-stricken third world country, right?
True.
Okay, so a lot of good stuff, and we're taking advantage of that every day. We're using that, you and I, right?
True.
Okay. Now, also in our past, now when I say our, I'm not talking about your personal or my personal, but I'm talking about the past that you and I share as citizens of America, and that is also in America's past, there was tremendous harm done to people. You agree with that?
Yeah, there was harm done. Yeah.
Okay. And to the extent that that harm is, that there are still people injured by that harm. And you know, I agree with the folks who are, with some of the folks who are concerned about affirmative action in suggesting that over time those harms are, those consequences of those harms are diminishing. I mean, we want them to diminish. We want eventually to have a society in America where affirmative action is no longer necessary. But to the extent that there is still some echo of those harms, that there are still some people who are still wounded by those harms, don't you think that as a society we have a responsibility to clean that act up?
Well, they already have. I mean, they passed the civil rights law. I had a great grandfather and a great great grandfather who was both in the Union Army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you that they have passed the civil rights law, but I can also tell you that when Louise and I moved to Atlanta in 1983, the woman who was driving us around Atlanta said, "Do you want to see houses in a white community or in a mixed community?" I'm telling you, racism is still alive and well. I know people who are African Americans who when they call, and I mean this. I don't even have to use my own examples. I mean, there was a really good study that was done just a couple of years ago. It was the basis of a TV show. I forget which network and which show it was, where they had, you know, a white guy and an African-American guy call and simply apply for jobs, try to get an apartment. There were a couple of other things. And there was a huge difference in the response. The African-American guy was told the job was already filled. The white guy was said, come on in and apply for the job. I mean, yes, these things are illegal, but it's still happening. The harms are still there. They're not there as badly as they were there 10 years ago. They're not there as badly as they were 20 or 30 years ago. And therefore, over time, we have to continuously fine tune the laws that we have that are there to repair those harms. But the harms are still there. We still have ghettos that are racially segregated. Do you deny that?
Companies that discriminate, you know, they ought to be held responsible for that.
I agree. I agree with you, Bob. Bob, I got to move along, but I absolutely agree with you. And we need to be more aggressively enforcing the laws, and then there will be less need for affirmative action. And yet, at the moment, we still have responsibility for those harms. Bob, thanks for the call. Philip in St. Louis is on the line. Hey, Philip, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that it seems to me that the principles and the values of Christianity are directly at odds with what the conservatives want. That, you know, that Jesus didn't say, let's turn a profit on the fishes and the loaves. He said, let's hand them out and help the poor directly and have faith that there's enough to go around. And that is at direct odds with the principles of scarcity and supply and demand. And then the other point I wanted to make is that we tried the conservative plan, and it got us into the Great Depression.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, and it got us 50 years of incredible poverty between the end of the Civil War and the early 20s. You know, during the Gilded Age, we were where it was, you know, anything goes. And yeah, we have been there, we have done that. And Bush and Karl Rove says he wants to take us back to the time of McKinley. McKinley, 1897. He wants to take us back to the end of the 19th century, the early 20th century, and these guys, this so-called Social Security reform, for example, is all about dismantling Social Security. The ultimate goal is to turn it entirely private. You think Social Security has a crisis? Medicare has a much larger crisis, and the Medicaid programs, the state programs as well. They're not talking about those yet, but as soon as they privatize Social Security or got the camel's nose under the edge of the tent, you know, got the thing started. Then it's going to be Medicare. That's going to be next. And that the whole agenda here, and they're not, you know, secret about it. The whole agenda here is to roll back the New Deal, to say, you know, what Franklin Roosevelt did, we're going to roll it back. And then they have the audacity to quote Martin Luther King and use his words as justification for what they're doing, and to try and pit one race against another race by saying that affirmative action is the cause of the problems that are being caused by their economic policies. It's outrageous. Philip, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out, too, about something your previous caller and an attitude that a lot of people seem to have is, if anybody thinks we don't have a responsibility to the other people in this country, we are bound by the Constitution of this country to establish justice and domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, ensure the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty. It's right in the preamble of the Constitution. That is what we're bound to do in this country.
That's right. And the first three words of the preamble are "We the people," not "I an individual and a whole bunch of other individuals." No, it's "We the people" collectively. That there, we do have this thing called society. There is this thing called the social contract. And conservatives would like you to not know about that, but it's there and it's real. Thanks a lot for the call. Philip, well said, and I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin from Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hey, I think a lot of you, and I think you're right, and what you've just commented on, I think, is correct about the neocons. Basically, what they are is contemporary, I would say, Democrats like Karl Rove.
You know, it's not even neocons and conservatives. It's funny. Bernie Sanders and I had this conversation off the air last week. He said that he doesn't call them conservatives. He calls them right wing extremists because he thinks that there are some good people who consider themselves conservatives, and he doesn't want to pick on them. It really, and he's really right. We are talking here about right wing extremists, not traditional Barry Goldwater conservatives.
No, I understand, but they've taken the name and inverted it, the power base of the Republican Party. But
yeah.
I'd like to comment, you know, they are the Orwellian Party.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'd like to comment. I got a bone to pick with you.
Okay, we got about a minute.
Okay, I disagree with something that you said, and basically I'm trying to do this with a lot of class. Where do you get off saying that people, Tom, working class, that don't get a free ride, are obligated to support the rich and the poor that won't work, giving them a free ride?
Well, and, I don't think that we should be supporting the rich
and
giving them a free ride, number one.
And number two,
Armin, I would say that there is no such thing as those of us who are doing it on our own. We all did it as a result of public education, which is a welfare program. We all did it as a result of home mortgage loans, for example, you know, to be able to buy a house.
Who do you think designs welfare? The rich design welfare to get richer and keep us divided.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, we can discuss it, but I don't think so. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vasilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I call on Washington today. I call on every man and woman of goodwill all over America today. I call on the young men of America who must make a choice today. Take a stand on this issue. Tomorrow may be too late. Book may close. And I don't know about you, I ain't gonna study war no more.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, and Ellen Ratner's on the line with us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, happy Martin Luther King Day, and how's everything in Washington?
Well, everybody is preparing for Martin Luther King Day and the inauguration. Actually, I'm about to, ready to go to the White House where the president is going to be. We have pool today, and for those of you that don't know, once every 9 days, the 9 radio entities that cover the White House follow the president around. Today is our day, so we're going to be going to the Kennedy Center where he's going to a Martin Luther King event.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
But I think the big news in town is what's going to happen with the Condi Rice hearings. Those are happening tomorrow.
Right.
And also, I'm hearing that the White House would like nothing better than to get rid of Rumsfeld because they feel he's too high profile. But they have nobody that they want a replacement. They looked at Lieberman. It just not, you know, tough enough. They looked at McCain. They think he's kind of crazy. And that's what we're hearing.
And they're afraid of Wolfie.
Well, Wolfie...
Here, just plain old flat-out scared to death of him.
Yeah, Wolfie would go also. I'm sorry, Wolfie would not go. Wolfie would stay. He's actually pretty well-liked. It's Feist that would go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's that's an interesting change. Is that the gossip, or is that gossip coming out of the out of the Republicans, out of the administration?
Yes, somebody very high placed in the Pentagon sort of gave me that little juicy piece of news.
Huh.
Of course, the White House will never admit to it. But as I heard in the press room the other day, somebody said, why don't they just cancel the inauguration? I'd love him if he did that, said one press member. The other press said, well, why don't they just have it in a small room where nobody's allowed in like they do everything else behind the scenes?
There you go. Now, what about all the counter-inaugural events that are happening around Washington, D.C.?
There's a lot of counter-inaugural. There's actually a big event at one of these sort of disco clubs, which is it's right at the edge of Washington, sort of along the train tracks. And then the Billionaires for Bush, they're having an event at another nightclub, and then there's all kinds of things that will happen along the parade route. The Secret Service is now saying, yes, you can use protest signs, but they have to be a certain size.
A certain size. It says this in the Constitution, right?
That's right, exactly. Can you imagine?
Your freedom of speech shall not be abridged as long as your sign is the right size.
Right, exactly.
Oh, it's amazing. And the Progressive Democrats of America, do you know about them and what they're doing?
You know, I don't. There's that other group. Oh, gosh, why am I blocking on the name? They've been around for ages and ages. They're also doing an event. I'm having the senior moment. But there's I'd say there's about 8 or 10 major counter-inaugural events going on in this town. And, of course, the biggest one that everybody's talking about is along the parade route, where everybody would turn their backs to him as he came through.
I was just going to ask, do you think that that's going to gain traction? Do you think it's going to happen?
Well,
and do you think it'll be covered?
Traction, but first of all, it's very cold, and protesters are not known for showing up in huge amounts of cold. I hate to be direct about it.
Well, in the last inaugural, people actually threw eggs at his car, and he had to run. He had to drive 40 miles an hour, race through this thing because so many people were throwing eggs and tomatoes.
Well, they're very
yelling
aware
at
of that
him.
This time.
But the media didn't cover it last time when this happened. Do you think that if people turn their backs, it'll get covered?
I think there will be more coverage of it this time simply because the media got chastised for not covering it last time. But I will also say last time, and I was along the parade route, there were entire spots where media were only allowed to be stationed in certain spots,
right,
and we actually didn't see some of it.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting. Okay, so Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service.
Not a problem.
Yeah, thank you, Ellen.
Thanks.
Great. Thanks for the report. Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. The show where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I think not. Humans only, please.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Walmart is in the midst of a new public relations campaign aimed at countering criticisms leveled against it by organized labor and others that Walmart's practices are harmful to workers and to the communities in which it operates. Greg Denier of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says there are real social costs created by Walmart. Denier told the Boston Globe that full-time workers at Walmart are not only low paid, but often don't get full 40-hour weeks nor adequate health insurance. Walmart says it provides stable jobs, a 401k retirement plan, and opportunities for advancement. Walmart is the biggest employer in the U.S. with 1.2 million workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union is trying to organize some Walmart stores.
70,000 daily bus riders in Queens and Brooklyn have been stranded by a bus worker strike. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Union representatives say talks have been focused on health care, but they broke down on Friday. Union leaders are angry that the mayor will not discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract. John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
New York City Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations have been scheduled, and bus riders have been forced to find other forms of transportation.
A little-known Department of Labor program that provides wage insurance for older workers is in place until 2007. The test program was written into the 2002 trade bill. The program is for workers over 50 displaced from their jobs due to trade competition and earning less in the new jobs than they did in the old ones. To be eligible for the program, workers have to be making less than $50,000 a year. The wage subsidy is 50% of the difference between their old salaries and their new ones. It's called the Alternative Trade Adjustment Assistance for Older Workers. Older workers displaced by foreign trade are also eligible for a credit toward health care costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Department of Labor plans to no longer require employers to report data on female and male employees after July 2005. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cites a lack of interest as the primary reason for dropping those statistics. A letter endorsed by both Republican and Democratic Congresswomen is currently circulating Congress asking that the Bureau reconsider. There is concern that without the information, a distorted picture of employment changes may result.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Yes, indeed, and one of the few in America who are, or who is Senator Barbara Boxer. Senator Barbara Boxer intends to ask Condoleezza Rice. This is an email I got from Mark Crispin Miller this morning, the author of the Bush Dyslexicon. He says, Senator Barbara Boxer intends to ask Condoleezza Rice some tough questions at her Senate confirmation hearing in the coming days, questions the American people deserve to have answered. For example, these are the things Senator Boxer has said she's going to ask Condi Rice. Why did the United States go to war in Iraq based on misleading, if not false, and fraudulent evidence? Why did we divert valuable resources and intelligence personnel to Iraq, taking them away from Afghanistan in the pursuit of Osama bin Laden? Why did Dr. Rice mislead the American people into thinking there was a connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda before 9/11? He goes on to say that she has a petition on this issue. And you can get to it. It's a fairly long URL, so I put it on our message board. If you go to TomHartman.com and click message board, and you go to the domestic politics section of our message board, it's probably the top or very near the top. It's titled Barbara Boxer. And it'll give you the link to her website where you can communicate with the good senator. I'm starting to think Barbara Boxer for president. I mean, I'm just nearly there. She has earned my respect. Absolute respect. This woman is awesome. Absolutely awesome. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Will in Los Angeles on the line. Hey, Will.
Hey, Tom.
Has it started to dry out there yet?
Yes, it is. Yep, finally.
That's
after
a relief.
Mudslides and everything.
Yep. So what's up?
I just want to split hairs a little on affirmative action and maybe take a slightly different tack on it.
Okay.
I don't really feel that history makes me personally responsible. That's a little too much guilt for me. I think the present makes me responsible. The fact that there are these people who are disadvantaged, albeit because of history, but they're here right now, and so am I, and as a human being, I have an obligation to help them.
Okay, well, that's a hair I'll let you split. I think we're saying the same thing in different ways, but I agree with you. Sure.
More or less, and this isn't just moral altruism.
We can't
pragmatic.
I understand, and I've said many times. On the one hand, while I believe that the grounding, the foundation of liberal social policy or politics, whatever you want to call it, is found in the Jewish notion of tikkun. That we are born onto this earth to heal the world, that we are all born with the obligation to do so, or the Christian notion that Jesus laid out in Matthew 25. At the same time, I have lived and worked in countries where literally when you walk out the front door of your house, there's 20 kids with open sores with their hands out begging for money to buy food. And I don't want to live in that kind of a world. So in a very selfish way, we have an obligation, I think, or not an obligation, but a desire to make sure that there's some equality in our society, some relative equality, not a Marxist equality, but just a rational equality.
There are very good utilitarian reasons for this. I live in downtown L.A. I see very poor, very desperate people every day.
Yeah, and it would be better not to. And that doesn't mean that we should do the Rudy Giuliani thing of round him up and drive him out of town. It means that what you do is you work to end poverty. And as Ben Franklin pointed out, you don't end poverty by giving poor people money and saying, here, you end poverty by giving people access to education, giving them access to health care, giving them access to child care so that they can get and providing an economy and building an economy that actually works, and protecting your domestic economy with your international trade policies so that people can get jobs. The best welfare program in the world is a good job. I mean, that's the bottom line. And to the extent to which we still have welfare programs is a reflection of the failure of our economic policies in some extent. And of course, as we've been talking about for the last hour and a half, this 200 and some odd year history that we have. But see, that only looks at the racial aspect of it. I mean, the reality is that there are more white folks living in poverty in the United States than there are black folks. And much of that actually comes out of racism as well. The Irish, the coming over here, the Scotch and the Irish, particularly the Irish, many of whom settled in Appalachia, were just soundly discriminated against for a long, long time. But they didn't experience anything like slavery, you know, and so it's dangerous to even go to the point of, you know, it's like trying to compare things to the Holocaust. You just can't do it. You know, but in any case, good point. Thank you very much.
One other really quick thing.
Yes, sir. Will.
Fellow earlier said that it's all about personal rights, individual rights.
Yeah. And property rights. He said, yeah.
Well, the only good way I see to protect personal rights is to have a good society.
Yeah, and see, that's
society first.
That's the thing. I mean, he started out echoing the conservatives and the libertarians, saying that it's all personal rights and property rights. And where they miss the boat is that there is a third leg to that stool, and the stool will fall over without three legs. And the third leg is society, as you point out. Well said. Will, I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Scott in Kalamazoo, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Oh, hey, you know, I'm a convert from when you were on Air America.
Oh,
so now I catch your shows the day after in the archive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
on WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Yeah. I just really enjoy your how you put everything into historical context.
Thank you.
You know, going back to the founding fathers, and which is where everything started. So I really enjoy that. So I catch your show in the archive. The reason I was calling, I guess, is that I think it's important that I haven't heard talked about enough is that I think as a country and as a people, we need to focus more on the fact that institutions are just words that we use to label things. And it's the people inside of those institutions that are making the decisions and taking the actions that we may or may not have a problem with. You know, it's not Enron that does certain things, it's Ken Lay. You know, it's not, you know, the government or the Defense Department, it's Rumsfeld, you know.
Well, to some extent, though, Scott, there is a chicken and egg situation here, and that is that when you get institutions that are designed in particular ways, you know, they have to operate by particular rules. For example, in the last during the Reagan administration, when the Supreme Court ruled that if you work for a corporation at a senior level, at a decision-making level, as a member of the board of directors or a senior executive, and you make decisions that don't enhance corporate profitability, you've committed a crime. Okay, it's called failure of fiduciary responsibility, and therefore every decision has to be based on the single premise of, will this enhance profitability or not? So if you can figure out a way when working for the corporation to get the taxpayers to pay, or the people in the community to pay for the cost of your business, say your business is creating pollution, as you know, one of the five most heavily polluting companies in the entire state of Texas was run for years and years by the guy that George Bush has now nominated to be Secretary of Energy, which is a whole other rant. But say, you know, his goal was to make sure that the cost of that pollution was not paid for by his company, that the taxpayers through Medicare and Medicaid and individuals in insurance companies and whatnot had to pay for all the health consequences, and that the environmental consequences were paid for by others. So you try to internalize profits and externalize costs. At that level, the institution is driving the behavior of the individuals. I mean, you have to, as an individual, decide, am I going to work for this company and do this or not have a job?
Well, and I appreciate that. And I just would think that, you know, to a certain extent also, we need to recognize that it's not just the institution, that you're right, that people do make those decisions.
Yeah, but
people need to be held accountable or need to be brought up by name that so and so made this decision.
Yeah,
I realized it was one of the bankruptcy cases, something that hasn't happened. It was unprecedented. I don't remember which one, if it was Tyco or Rite Aid or whichever one it was, where some of the corporate and chairmen of the board, those people were contributing, I think it was 20% of their net worth to reimburse and compensate, you know, workers and shareholders and stuff for decisions that they had made, knowingly
right.
made. And I think more of that was out there, and we kept people accountable more than we do now, and don't let them hide behind the institution. I think, you know, we'd be a better country for it. Because I think
we
kind of lost, to a certain extent, I mean, a sense of nationalism. You know, whether it's nationalism in the sense that, you know, we're letting corporations go overseas, or that the people who are on the boards or controlling that are, you know, that they're controlled by that first, whereas other companies, especially Asian companies, Japan, et cetera, you know, tend to be more nationalistic in how they look at things.
Let's call it patriotism rather than nationalism. Okay, nationalism has kind of
patriotism.
A bad word, but really,
in the sense
that
I understand, you know, corporations can be under certain pressures, but instead of taking into consideration their workers, their shareholders, their communities first, trying to work something out, giving that community, that government entity a chance to work with it,
yeah.
instead of just going overseas, because that's where, you know, it happens the best. I think we've lost that to a certain extent.
Well, but again,
that patriotism.
You know, I agree with you, and patriotism is hugely lacking, and a sense of society and the impact on society, and this goes back. I mean, again, I encourage people to rent Michael Moore's first movie, Roger and Me, and really see the concept when General Motors decided to close down their factories in Flint and open an identical number of factories or very nearly identical number of factories in Mexico, and what it did to that community, how it affected that community. And the entire movie is about Michael Moore trying to get to Roger Smith, the CEO of General Motors, and simply show him what he had done to this community. And ultimately, semi-successfully, it's a surprise ending, so I won't give it away. But in any case, that is real. And yet, we also have to, on the one hand, we have to be holding people accountable. On the other hand, the larger issue here, because it's so easy to just say, oh, it's just a few bad apples, like George Bush has said. The other thing is that we have to change the rules of the game. And this is what Teddy Roosevelt was about. It's what Franklin Roosevelt was about. It's what John Kennedy was talking about. And it's what has not been talked about since Ronald Reagan. In fact, if anything, since Ronald Reagan, and that includes George Herbert Walker Bush, it includes Bill Clinton, it includes George Walker Bush, in these last four presidencies, the last generation, essentially, what we have seen is that the rules of the game have been steadily eroded away from corporate responsibility to communities and humans and nation and patriotism, and towards corporate responsibility to stockholders and directors, CEOs, and profit, period.
That's really where I appreciate your historical context. I think, you know, people's, in general, their understanding of history, you know, beyond the past, you know, maybe year, really isn't as acute as it should be. To
no, absolutely.
Going back
and
far enough
yeah.
to appreciate the relevance of things that have happened to today, and that's why I appreciate how you put that into that context. And the other thing really quickly, I think, sort of ties in is you know, where is you know, the religious institutions and leaders in letting this happen? Where
absolutely.
Is the
this
effort
is...
like they had during the Civil Rights Movement, you know, 40 years ago, where are they in that saying, why are there more people in poverty? You know, why are we
yeah.
going in the wrong direction with regards to the distribution of wealth in this country with
spot
healthcare
on.
And those kinds of things, which, you know, which really is some of the main foundations of what the major religions are based on. And they're silent in that. They're,
spot on.
You know, once it gets past,
spot on.
You know, homosexuals,
Scott,
and things, they're quiet.
I know. Because the cons wanted to find the issues, and they only wanted to find issues that are going to divide people rather than unite people, because that's their political strategy. Scott, you're absolutely right, and you know, and very well said. And in fact, this morning when we were doing show prep, Louise and I were listening to some clips of Martin Luther King to, you know, pull out one for the show that we played in the first hour. And she made the comment to me. She turned to me and she said, where are the people today who will speak with the passion and the righteousness and that he did? And there's not a lot of them out there. You know, John Edwards and Howard Dean and Dennis Kucinich. We had Paul Wellstone. Barbara Boxer. I don't know enough about her politics other than just very recently as she come onto my radar screen. Where are the people who will stand up for we the people, for patriotism, for our nation, for what's best for the United States? I'm not hearing them. I'm not hearing their voices, and I want to. Ed in California is on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Al Sharpton, I like to.
Yeah, Al Sharpton actually speaks very well.
It's more sense than a lot of them.
It's such a shame that he tarnished his reputation with that whole Tawana Brawley thing, because he had the potential to be and still has probably the potential to be an important and credible voice in America.
Isn't part of the problem is that once again we've been divided? I listened to some of your callers, and we're discussing the rights and wrongs of affirmative action. And the people that are calling are obviously well-educated, well-written, well-understanding people, but have failed to grasp the thing that it's about all of us.
Yeah, yeah. And that was, you know, the guy who called me a meathead. I mean, you know, it's...
was absolutely hysterical, Tom. And thank you for not saying shut up and all the stuff that you would get on wrong-wing radio.
Well, see, the only time that there's a need to yell shut up at somebody is if you have no argument and you're not and you're, you know, and I'm always willing to engage in conversation. When O'Reilly does that, it just says to me, this is a guy who doesn't know his issues, who doesn't have
divided,
an argument.
We're divided once again on nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they keep dividing us, and that's where your 52% comes from.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And that's why people consistently vote against their own economic and social interests, as Thomas Frank so well documented in his book, What's the Matter with Kansas? Ed, thanks for the call. I got to move along. 1-866-889-8894. Beverly in Detroit is on the line. Hey, Beverly.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's up, Beverly?
Tom, I've been listening to your callers that are calling in that they're claiming no ownership or responsibility for past historical discrimination, such as in slavery.
Yeah, and I keep trying to point it out to them.
But I guess, you know, what my real problem with that is that, you know, it's like they think that we started a brand new nation. You know, England emptied out their prisons, and all these people that came over here, they were geniuses, and they were competing against long-established governments and countries. What happened to the 400 years of free labor that slavery
yes.
allowed the United States to grow to?
This nation was built on the back of slave labor, and it was built on the land of Native Americans.
And you know, if you want to compare that to NAFTA, how long has NAFTA been in existence? And here we are crying about the uneven playing field.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what has happened, Beverly? And I'm sorry to we have hard breaks. I don't have any control over when the break happens. We've got to wrap this up. But we have not only not ended slavery in America, we have exported it. We are now moving our slaves overseas, in my opinion. Beverly, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush O, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more involved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Union members for bus companies in Queens and Brooklyn have been on strike for more than a week. On Friday, talks between the city and the Amalgamated Transit Union collapsed, leaving no relief in sight for 70,000 daily bus riders. WIN correspondent Sarah Turner reports from New York City.
I have to go all the way to Manhattan to work, so I have to take this bus to the subway.
One local Queens resident expresses the concerns many riders are experiencing as the strike enters its second week. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Sal Vadagalia is president of ATU Local 1181. He says talks center around better health care and benefits. He spoke after negotiations broke down.
Go on until they come back to the table what they promised.
The mayor says the existing bus franchise system is not working and is in negotiations with the bus line owners to buy their companies and transfer them to MTA. Union leaders are angry the mayor won't discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179. Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations are scheduled, and riders, for the time being, will have to find another way to work. For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner in New York City.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
You can look to the stars in search of the answers. Look for God and life on distant planets. Have your faith in the ever after. While each of us holds inside the map to the labyrinth. Heaven's here on earth.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour, coming up on 4 minutes before the hour, actually. And by the way, one of the folks in our chat room had asked some time ago, what's up with Thomas Jefferson, the mouse who lives outside right outside our studio here, and who kept distracting me the week before last, coming out, digging through leaves and finding little seeds and things and sitting munching on them and looking at me as I was on the air. I haven't seen him in a couple of days. I saw his tracks yesterday, but today there are cat tracks out there. There is a big bruiser stray cat that Louise has been feeding when I have said, please. She's feeding him so that he won't eat the mouse. But I'm wondering, do we want a stray cat here or not? It's a whole discussion. Anyhow, we need not go into that, but we're going to name him Cat George the Third. So we have this tension between Thomas Jefferson and Cat George the Third. But I don't see any evidence of a struggle out there. So I'm assuming that Thomas is still just fine, in answer to your question. And finally, just to close out this discussion of affirmative action, I want to make this point that I made in the first hour. We had a caller, and I know a lot of folks have tuned in since then. This guy called up and he said, I have no responsibility for slavery. I have, and I said to him, that if I came over to his house and got in a fight with him and broke his arms and legs with a lead pipe and then said, okay, a week from now, we're going to have a fist fight in your front yard. And it's going to be a fair fight, right? Cause we're both guys, that are, the same age and same size or whatever. Would that be fair if you had a broken legs and broken arm? He goes, well, no. And I said, well, that's here we are. Actually, he said, yeah, he started out trying to say, yeah, and this is the guy who hung up on me. He says, well, you're a meathead and hung up on me. But the point is, when you have created a harm, you can't simply say, as this Republican who's running for the governorship of New Jersey is trying to say in the news conference that he held in this last hour, in which he said that if he's elected governor of New Jersey, he's going to end all affirmative action programs in Dr. King's name, of all things. Because in his opinion, there is no more discrimination. We have a colorblind society now. Give me a break. People are still recovering from hundreds of years of those broken arms and legs. Literally broken arms and legs. And if we don't solve this problem, it's going to continue. We must repair this damage. You have to give people an opportunity to heal. You have to give them bootstraps before you can expect them to pull themselves up by them. It's Tom Hartman with you, exposing the con in conservatives.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Walmart is in the midst of a new public relations campaign aimed at countering criticisms leveled against it by organized labor and others that Walmart's practices are harmful to workers and to the communities in which it operates. Greg Denier of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says there are real social costs created by Walmart. Denier told the Boston Globe that full-time workers at Walmart are not only low-paid, but often don't get full 40-hour weeks nor adequate health insurance. Walmart says it provides stable jobs, a 401k retirement plan, and opportunities for advancement. Walmart is the biggest employer in the U.S. with 1.2 million workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union is trying to organize some Walmart stores.
70,000 daily bus riders in Queens and Brooklyn have been stranded by a bus worker strike. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Union representatives say talks have been focused on health care, but they broke down on Friday. Union leaders are angry that the mayor will not discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract. John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
New York City Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations have been scheduled, and bus riders have been forced to find other forms of transportation.
A little-known Department of Labor program that provides wage insurance for older workers is in place until 2007. The test program was written into the 2002 trade bill. The program is for workers over 50 displaced from their jobs due to trade competition and earning less in the new jobs than they did in the old ones. To be eligible for the program, workers have to be making less than $50,000 a year. The wage subsidy is 50% of the difference between their old salaries and their new ones. It's called the Alternative Trade Adjustment Assistance for Older Workers. Older workers displaced by foreign trade are also eligible for a credit toward health care costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Department of Labor plans to no longer require employers to report data on female and male employees after July 2005. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cites a lack of interest as the primary reason for dropping those statistics. A letter endorsed by both Republican and Democratic Congresswomen is currently circulating Congress asking that the Bureau reconsider. There is concern that without the information, a distorted picture of employment changes may result.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Gosh, there's never a flamethrower handy when you need one. It's bad enough that food scientists have used genetic manipulation to create dangerous Frankenfoods, but now they've definitely gone too far. They're messing with Mexican food. I bring you two alarming examples from the laboratories at Texas A&M University. First, a scientist there has devoted himself and untold wads of our tax dollars to produce this stunning technological advance. A low-heat habanero pepper. Yoo-hoo, Professor. The whole idea of the habanero is that it is hot. Way too hot for my taste. But others are gluttons for heat, so the habanero is their gold standard of what a pepper should be. But, cries the professor, with our new meek habanero, all the people who shy away from the heat can now eat one. Yoo-hoo again. There are hundreds of varieties of peppers, all with varying degrees of hot. You want meek? Eat a pimento. But this pepper guy looks sane next to his madcap colleague at A&M who has been doing busy work with another Mexican food staple, the humble tortilla. Tortillas are the essence of simplicity, and it's best to eat them fresh, though they'll naturally stay fresh for a few days. But this is not good enough for the food science crowd or for the big corporate distributors that are hoping to lock up the national market. So for the past 3 years, this lab smock has had his mind, and more of our tax money, at work on the development of a flour tortilla that he claims will stay fresh without refrigeration for more than a month. And he's not stopping there. He's now collaborating with Iowa State Food Mechanics to produce fresh tortillas that will last, get this, 4 years. This is Jim Hightower saying, do we need any of this? How many people are sitting at their kitchen table in the morning thinking, what America really needs is a non-hot habanero and a tortilla that'll last 4 years?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
The man who uncovered uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com. Get you into our chat room if you'd like to drop in and say hi. Participate in the conversation of the day. 1-866 toll free. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to share your thoughts. Today, Martin Luther King Day. We celebrate the anniversary of the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King. One of the finest Americans who ever lived. This an extraordinary, a truly extraordinary human being who is largely remembered for his work in civil rights, in the civil rights field, as he most appropriately should be, absolutely. And, however, the thinking, the breadth of Dr. King's thinking and idealism extended far beyond just civil rights. Which is not to relegate civil rights to a small category. It was a huge category, and still is. But he also was very concerned with issues of war and peace, of social justice that went beyond race, of class and society. He was one of our most brilliant thinkers, one of our most articulate defenders of the rights of all people, of all religions and of all colors, of all races, of all, you know, just of all people, particularly those who were the disenfranchised, the poor, the left behind, the trampled upon. He was born on the 15th of January, 1929, ordained in 1947, graduated Morehouse University at Morehouse College in 1948. He was married to Coretta Scott King in 1953. In 55 and 56, participated in the Montgomery bus boycott, which propelled him into the national eye. His I Have a Dream speech was on the 28th of August in Washington, D.C. in 1963. A year later, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. 4 years later, he was shot to death here in the United States. Here in the United States. We had in that era, in that five-year period, an orgy of violence at the high levels, you know, John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and at the low and low levels. I'm not sure what words we should use for this, but I mean, we were having and it continued for actually a half a decade after that. We were having a terrible violence in our cities, just an ongoing situation. In 1983, Dr. King's birthday was declared a national holiday, one of only two Americans to have a national holiday named after them, the other being George Washington, who founded this nation. Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, just a one-minute clip from it, 63 seconds here, from his I Have a Dream speech, one of his most famous, but well worth revisiting.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day, yes, this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
And his dream, of course, has not yet been fully realized in America, but we have made tremendous progress. We have made tremendous progress. One of Dr. King's more passionate issues was the issue of the military-industrial complex. And it's interesting to note that today is also the anniversary of Dwight D. Eisenhower's farewell speech to America. And the President Eisenhower, in which Eisenhower spoke of something that Dr. Martin Luther King would speak of a decade, two decades later, a generation later. And that is the danger of a huge corporate government alliance. I mean, I don't think he saw Halliburton on the horizon, and yet he still saw it. The danger of this huge corporate government alliance. And here we have Dwight Eisenhower.
Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society.
And on this day in history, Eisenhower then uttered the famous words.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
And I would say that we have, and as Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said later, a true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war. This way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting the poisonous drug of hate into the veins of people normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. Dr. King added, a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. There is such a confluence of these things here, of the issue of the history of and legacy of slavery in the United States, of militarism in the United States. It was George Washington who said we must avoid foreign entanglements. Jefferson was outspoken about this. And I think it's interesting to just trace the arc of this for a moment. Jefferson, for example, let's specifically deal with him. Here's a guy who penned the phrase that Martin Luther King quoted, all men are created equal, who penned that phrase and yet was a slaveholder. And I'm making, you know, no apologies for Jefferson on behalf of Jefferson for that, by the way. But it's interesting to just look at the evolution of Jefferson's thought on this issue, because it's not much talked about in America, and I think it's important that we do so. He was prescient in many ways. On the Jefferson Memorial, he was writing about slavery, the issue of slavery, and he wrote, can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with his wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. The Almighty has no attribute, Jefferson wrote, which can take side with us in such a contest. Speaking of slavery, specifically. People say, but wait a minute, we thought that he was in favor of that. Actually, Howell versus Netherland was a court case in April of 1770, 6 years before he signed, before he wrote the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson was practicing law. He was a private lawyer. A very young man. And the first case he took was defending a slave who had requested his freedom, and he spoke on behalf of the slave, Howell. And Jefferson said, quote, under the laws of nature, all men are born free, and everyone comes into the world with the right to his own person, which includes the liberty of moving and using it at his own will. At his own will. What most people don't know is that a year before that, 1769, as a legislator in Virginia, Jefferson had introduced legislation which would have ended the importation of slaves into the United States. The good fathers of Virginia set out to punish him for that by passing a law that said that if any Virginia slaveholder freed their slaves, those slaves would be immediately captured and sold at auction, which then presented a problem for Jefferson. Here he was advocating an end to slavery, or at least a gradual end. He, in a 1774 booklet, a summary view of the rights of British America, he attacked George III for slavery, for allowing slavery. You know, from before the time he was even born. He tried to write into the Constitution of the State of Virginia provision that would gradually but totally eliminate slavery, starting in 1800. And in 1778, he presented an even more radical bill that would have abolished slavery altogether in Virginia that year. In 1783, he again unsuccessfully attempted to amend Virginia's Constitution, proposing language. Again, this is 20 years before he was president, 17 years before he became president, proposing language that said, quote, the General Assembly shall not permit the introduction of any more slaves to reside in the state or the continuance of slavery beyond the generation which shall be living on the 31st day of December, 1800, all persons born after that day being hereby declared free. As he wrote in 1788 to J.P. Brissot de Warville, the leader of the French Abolitionist Society, he said, you know that nobody wishes more ardently to see an abolition, not only of the whole trade, but of the condition of slavery. And certainly nobody will be more willing to encounter every sacrifice for that object than me. Eddy argued for the introduction into the Constitution of Article 1, Section 9, which still reads, it's still in the Constitution. The migration or importation of such persons, that being slaves, as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit, shall be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. In other words, 1808, Jefferson thought that they were going to end slavery in 1808. That was, ironically, the last year of his presidency. He was unsuccessful. On May 1st, 1806, while Jefferson was president, but held no power in Virginia, the Virginia Assembly passed a law, another law, that any slave freed in that state had to leave the state forever or would be arrested by the state itself and sold back into slavery. The punishment of Thomas Jefferson by his peers in Virginia for his stands on slavery was pretty startling. There's a chapter about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? But Jefferson in his old age, I'll share it with you after the break. It's just absolutely remarkable. 20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 per shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
True revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say a war. This way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, filling our nation's homes and with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, and not be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love.
And welcome back. Martin Luther King's birthday today. Martin Luther King Day. Well, actually, his birthday was the 15th, but it's the day we celebrate his birthday. And I just want to draw this contrast, or this arc. Actually, it's an interesting arc of history from the 1700s to today. From the person who wrote the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, a slaveholder, who worked for much of his life against the institution of slavery, and yet was part of a society and a government that ratified slavery, to the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, who helped us erase the last institutional vestiges of slavery, that being apartheid in the United States. What was called segregation when I was a kid. And of course, it still hasn't been cleaned up. In many ways, I think many of us today are sort of where Jefferson was in his later years. And this is just so remarkable. In 1820, Thomas Jefferson, 6 years before he died, it was a decade after he'd been president. And on April 22nd, his good friend Congressman John Holmes of Massachusetts wrote a letter to Thomas Jefferson telling him about the Missouri Compromise, which was going to allow Missouri to become a slave state if Maine was not a slave state. They were going to admit both states. And Jefferson had argued that there should be no more slave states, that the Constitution said after 1808, that's it, slavery should be ended, and he had been unsuccessful in that argument. And he wrote a letter back to Holmes. He says, I thank you, dear sir, for the copy you have been so kind to send me of the letter on the Missouri question. I had for a long time ceased to read newspapers or pay any attention to public affairs, confident they were in good hands, and content to be a passenger in our bark, in the canoe, to the shore from which I am not distant. He's talking about knowing that he's going to die. But this momentous question, Jefferson wrote, like a fire bell in the night, awakened and filled me with terror. I consider it as once the death knell of the Union. It is hushed indeed for the moment, but this is a reprieve only, not a final sentence. See, he's forecasting now the Civil War. A geographical line, Jefferson wrote, coinciding with a marked principle, that being slavery, of course, moral and political, once conceived and held up to the angry passions of men, will never be obliterated, and every new irritation will mark it deeper and deeper. I can say with conscious truth that there is not a man on earth who would sacrifice more than I would to relieve us from this heavy reproach in any practicable way. He goes on, but here it is. We have the wolf by the ears, and we can neither hold him nor safely let him go. Justice is on one scale, and self-preservation in the other, speaking of preservation of the Union. And then he goes on to say, I regret that I am now to die in the belief that the useless sacrifice of themselves by the generation of 1776 to acquire self-government and happiness to their country is to be thrown away by the unwise and unworthy passions of their sons, and that my only consolation is to be that I live not to weep over it. He called slavery, quote, a treason against the hopes of the world. And he was right. He died. The Civil War came. Slavery was officially ended, but apartheid was established. And it took until the 1960s to end that. The work, in large part, of the man we honor today, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. 29 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the True People's Radio.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Walmart is in the midst of a new public relations campaign aimed at countering criticisms leveled against it by organized labor and others that Walmart's practices are harmful to workers and to the communities in which it operates. Greg Denier of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says there are real social costs created by Walmart. Denier told the Boston Globe that full-time workers at Walmart are not only low paid, but often don't get full 40-hour weeks nor adequate health insurance. Walmart says it provides stable jobs, a 401k retirement plan, and opportunities for advancement. Walmart is the biggest employer in the U.S. with 1.2 million workers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union is trying to organize some Walmart stores.
70,000 daily bus riders in Queens and Brooklyn have been stranded by a bus worker strike. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Union representatives say talks have been focused on health care, but they broke down on Friday. Union leaders are angry that the mayor will not discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract. John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
New York City Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations have been scheduled, and bus riders have been forced to find other forms of transportation.
A little-known Department of Labor program that provides wage insurance for older workers is in place until 2007. The test program was written into the 2002 trade bill. The program is for workers over 50 displaced from their jobs due to trade competition and earning less in the new jobs than they did in the old ones. To be eligible for the program, workers have to be making less than $50,000 a year. The wage subsidy is 50% of the difference between their old salaries and their new ones. It's called the Alternative Trade Adjustment Assistance for Older Workers. Older workers displaced by foreign trade are also eligible for a credit toward health care costs.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Department of Labor plans to no longer require employers to report data on female and male employees after July 2005. The Bureau of Labor Statistics cites a lack of interest as the primary reason for dropping those statistics. A letter endorsed by both Republican and Democratic Congresswomen is currently circulating Congress asking that the Bureau reconsider. There is concern that without the information, a distorted picture of employment changes may result.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. I want to take this now to the larger issue. I want to take this back out. I'm going to wrap it up with Martin Luther King again, speaking about these issues. But first, I want to just put this in the context of the arc of history of the United States. It's easy for us in this day and age to look back 200 years and criticize the founders, particularly Jefferson, who wrote All Men Are Created Equal in the Declaration of Independence and yet was a slaveholder. For all of this stuff. It's easy for us to criticize. Jefferson used the cheap labor resource of his slaves to maintain his lifestyle, and the consequence of the failure of his efforts to abolish slavery was a bloody civil war, which he foresaw and agonized over, followed by 100 years of legal apartheid. Although he rationalized his slaveholding by keeping them in a style that exceeded that of most whites of the day, both were grim by today's standards. It was nonetheless a rationalization of slavery. Jefferson's lifestyle was made possible by slave labor, and there's absolutely no other way to say it. Recognizing that fact, many Americans are righteously indignant and quick to judge him harshly. Yet how many of us, of all races, how many of us of European ancestry, how many of us of African ancestry, Asian, Hispanic, how many of us would willingly free our slaves? I'm speaking to you right now. I have my hand on a mixer board that was made in China. I'm looking at a computer that was assembled in Mexico. I don't know where this microphone was made, so I can't say for sure. The headphones I know were made in South Korea. The pants I'm wearing, Levi Strauss just closed their last U.S. factory. They were probably made in Malaysia or Vietnam. I can rationalize all the products of distant slaves that I use. After all, I don't have to look into their faces like Jefferson did. Which may account, by the way, why biographer Fawn Brody noted that whenever he came back from a trip to Monticello, he brought with him cases of gifts for his slaves. And his household ledgers show that he smuggled significant sums to Sally Hemings over the years. But it's still just a rationalization. The stark reality is that we in America didn't end slavery. We simply exported it. And it's so much more comfortable for us to criticize Jefferson for agonizing over, but still using slave labor 200 years ago, when we don't have to look into the faces of today's slaves who are toiling and dying at this very moment to sustain our lifestyles. Now, to quote the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on this issue, on April 4th of 1967 at the Manhattan Riverside Church, he said, "True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It is not haphazard and superficial. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring." He's talking clearly, the edifice he's speaking of is government and our economic institutions. He continues, "A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out, with no concern for the social betterment of the countries, and say, 'This is not just.'" He's speaking now of true compassion. True compassion will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say, "This is not just." The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. I think that we've come a long way. We have a long way to go. And the breadth of Dr. King's thinking in this, from the domestic issue of the echo of slavery here in the United States to the international issue of our use of slaves in other nations, are still very real issues. They are very much with us. And now we have the Bogota, New Jersey mayor and GOP gubernatorial candidate Steve Lonergan, who an hour ago called for an end to state affirmative action programs in New Jersey. He says if he's elected governor, he will shut down all state affirmative action offices and prohibit state agencies from asking someone's race on a job or grant application, college admission form, or other government document. And I'll bet he's in favor of the affirmative action program that George W. Bush used to get into college, into Harvard, the legacy program, or into Yale, rather. Lonergan said, quote, "Dr. King's dream that people be judged not on the color of their skin but on the content of their character can only be achieved by ending the practice of classifying people by skin color or other demographic statistic and make ability the only qualification in whether someone can do the job," end quote. This guy doesn't get it. Yes, of course, that's the society we want. But to assert that that's the society that we have, that we're there, And then you've got George W. Bush saying, we need to have individual, we need to privatize Social Security because African Americans die young, and therefore it's a benefit to them. Rather than saying, why don't we do something about the fact that an entire segment of our society is dying young? No, in Bush's world, it's all about the economics. This is nuts. This is absolutely nuts. By the way, do you know about the Not One Dime Day coming up? This is so great. This from the True Blue Network. "Since many religious leaders won't speak out against the war in Iraq, and since most political leaders don't have the moral courage to oppose it, Thursday, January 20th, has been designated across America as Not One Dime Day." Now, here's the irony of this, or the beauty of it, actually, I would say. The cons are aggressively right now trying to change the picture on the dime. They want to undo Social Security, Franklin Roosevelt's program. They want to undo Medicare, so Franklin Roosevelt's program. They want to undo the minimum wage laws, Franklin Roosevelt's program. They want to roll back the ability to unionize. I mean, they are. They have been doing all these things. They're attacking all these programs, have been consistently, ever since Reagan became president, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. Suspending, you know, increases in the minimum wage is the same thing as undoing. I mean, the minimum, nobody can make a living at $5 an hour. $5.15 or whatever it is. I mean, it's absurd. There was actually a time in the United States when on the minimum wage, you could more or less make it. It provided the basis for a middle class in America to some extent. The larger basis was provided by the fact that a quarter of America's workforce was unionized, which meant half of American workers had the equivalent of union benefits, because for every union job, there's another job that's identical wages and benefits, just because employers have to compete with each other, and the union job sets the floor. But now we're looking at 11, 12, 13% of the workforce, 8% of the private workforce, take out the government employees, are unionized. The death of the American middle class. So anyhow, they want to replace Franklin Roosevelt's picture on the dime with Ronald Reagan. So I think it's appropriate that these folks who are calling for this boycott have chosen the dime. Not one dime. On January 20th, don't spend any money. Not one dime for gasoline, not one dime for necessities, nor impulse buying, not one dime for anything for 24 hours. Read a book, take a walk, visit a museum, enjoy the day, revel knowing that you're turning your back on George W. Bush's inaugural day while opposing the Iraq War as well. Not One Dime Day is all about supporting our brave young men and women in uniform. Politicians put our troops in harm's way. Now over 1,300 valiant Americans and an estimated 100,000 Iraqis have died. They owe our soldiers a plan, a way to come home. No rally to attend, no marching to do, no left or right wing agenda. On January 20th, you take action by doing nothing. Cool. By the way, a huge question. This is something I've for a long, long time have wondered about. How is it that the productivity numbers have been going up in our country? And factory output numbers have been going up, and yet the manufacturing jobs are going away. How is it? How can it be that we've lost 2.5 million jobs, factory jobs, since George Bush became president? A loss, by the way, that began under Bill Clinton's presidency. Well, it goes all the way back to Reagan, but it really picked up when Clinton signed NAFTA and GATT. Thank you very much, Bill. In general, and how could this be? How could it be that we have the government, which, you know, the Fed, for example, it compiles these statistics, well, one of many agencies, the Fed looks at them. How can it be that these statistics show that we're seeing an increase in output, and yet the jobs are vanishing? Well, it's interesting. The Fed, displaced worker, by the way, sent this to me. I don't have a name. But thanks, I appreciate this, getting this thing in the mail. The New York Federal Reserve Bank, New York, www.newyorkfed.org, produced a research paper. It's newyorkfed.org/research/current_issues. It's their magazine, Volume 10, Number 9, August 2004, Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Current Issues. An article by Charles Steindl. It's called The Relationship Between Manufacturing Production and Goods Output. And he asked the question. He says, a curious phenomenon of the 2001 recession was a sharp divergence between two arguably similar economic indicators, the manufacturing component of industrial production and the goods output component of GDP. In other words, how can it be that we're seeing less manufacturing and yet there's more goods that we're counting, more goods produced? How can this be? Well, it turns out, I mean, he goes through and he cracks the numbers in this thing, this 9-10 page document. And the very last sentence, researchers who analyze only the manufacturing production data therefore have a limited view of the overall goods production process. Why is that? Well, it's, you know, rather than reading the super dense prose of the Fed, displaced worker summarized it nicely. He said, in general, the aggregates now include mostly financial services. Even the Dow Industrial Average has very little industry. Software sales, for example, are included in goods produced. So if I develop a software program and I put it on the web and you can download, like the antivirus programs, for example. Or, I mean, so much software now. I've got a whole bunch of software on my computer that I bought legally over the web. No product was shipped to me. Nobody had to manufacture anything. I mean, there was an original design. Something was designed just like you design a car, but then you make cars. But in the case of software, you don't make the software. You design it, you write it, and if you can distribute it by the web, and, I mean, you know, we pay for the software based on the value of what it's going to do. I have software programs that cost several hundred dollars. You know, the Adobe Audition, the program that we use for audio that's used in used to be called Cool Edit, that's used in studios all across the United States. It's several hundred dollars. You can buy it on the web. This is considered when you buy a $500 software program on the web, according to our government, manufacturing has happened. And what has happened is, as you know, Bill Gates would be the first to tell you. You know, this is the first, even when it gets shipped as a CD, the first CD costs, you know, a bunch of money to make because of all the design and everything. After that, it's, you know, 5 cents a piece, ship them out the door. So we have all this manufacturing going on, supposedly, and yet there's no manufacturing jobs. And this is a large part of why. And in addition, the government has started including in their numbers the business of moving the pallets from Asia into stores and doing advertising, marketing, and the financing. All of this is counted now as domestic production. So when Walmart sells something because they shipped it into the United States, it's considered produced. Believe it or not. And it took the Fed to finally tell us. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Dave in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I see now that the White House is already attempting to sell us, the public, on buying this end of Social Security, privatizing it. And one logic that, well, so many, but one that doesn't compute, if you are one of those people working for near minimum wage and even long hours, you cannot afford to invest much of it in any kind of a retirement plan. And if you did, you're probably going to end up having to borrow out of it and such. Whereas if you're rich, which is his people, they can invest in whatever they want, put any kind of retirement plans together they want. So it's obviously a system designed, as so many are, to favor the rich at the expense of the poor.
Yeah.
I hope people become aware of that in time.
Yeah, I hope so too, Dave, and thank you for pointing that out. It's becoming increasingly, I think, self-evident, but maybe not. I don't know. It needs to be pointed out over and over and over again that we are moving in the opposite direction under these conservative administrations from what Dr. King's vision was of an egalitarian society. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yeah, hold on tight to your dreams.
Hold on tight to your dreams.
Hey. Dreaming of an America that works. An America where everybody has an opportunity to become part of the middle class. At the very least. Hold on tight. Here's a good sign with the first, so far as I know, the only report on the military vote. The only report I've seen. Have you seen any? I don't. You know, I'd love to hear from anybody who knows of any military votes. So far, the only one I've seen is New Jersey. This is reported on Democratic Underground and the discussion board. And it's one county. Monmouth County, New Jersey, posted theirs online. They posted the military vote. And nobody else is. I haven't been able to find any others. And here's how it came out. Kerry, 275. Bush, 72. Kerry beat, well, what is that? 7-14-28. That's 4 to 1. Nearly 4 to 1. 275 to 72. Kerry beat Bush in the military vote in Monmouth County, New Jersey. Could it be that the same thing happened all across the United States? I think it's entirely possible. I think it's entirely possible. In fact, let's say likely. And now, you get to figure out if this is true or not. President Bush signed a job training bill into law Friday to ease the elderly back to work and, quote, end senior loafing as we know it, end quote. Bush told a cheering group of nursing home residents that, quote, there is no free lunch, cooking and cleaning keeps us fiscally fit and gives seniors moral fiber. Amidst much laughter, he added that, quote, we all know you folks can't get too much fiber, end quote. The newest jobs are ideally suited to the elderly whose decreased capacities are a perfect match for the tediously monotonous routines favored by employers. GOP plans call for training elderly fry cooks, janitors, Walmart greeters, and nuclear waste disposal experts. The latter is deemed appropriate for those of advanced age, since long gestation periods for cancer don't matter to seniors who will die soon anyway. This from www.bush2004.com. Check it out. It's the Tom Hartman Program, where our talking points come from Madison and Jefferson. And our news, apparently, from Bush2004.com, rather than some right-wing think tank or the RNC or any of those other questionable sources.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves.